Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Podcast.
Yo, what is up, Glass Cannon fans? Joe here.
And Troy.
And Joe. We are back with another episode of Cannon Fodder, a weekly recap and behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Podcast. See how that tagline is now rolling out?
It's getting there. It's getting practiced.
I did. I had all week. I do want to get right into it. We're recapping episode 58, an awesome, fun episode of an encounter, classic encounter, bunch of orcs and a giant and the party and your ranger nowhere to be seen. Right?
God.
A tale as old as time, yeah. as we often say.
You didn't survive.
Yeah, we didn't surrender. I mean, we teased it at the end of episode 57. Enoch Chalk, you know, Skid goes big. And I was like, well, you know, we're definitely going to have some level of combat. Not sure how it's going to go. And it got ugly fast with that hill giant. What was his name?
Jort.
Jort, the hill giant, roughs Galabras up.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm just going to put you on the spot right away.
Go for it.
Would you, were you worried that you were actually going to kill Galabras? I mean, he was dazed. He's standing there in front of him. I really thought that he was going to die. And I was like, it feels like we just lost Gormley. Like,
yeah, it certainly would not have been a good story moment. I don't think. And when he went dazed, I'm like, he is dead.
So this thing's got
two attacks. I think there's like plus 14 to attack. I don't have the stat box in front of me, but I mean, forget he was dead. Dead.
Yeah. And you have, I mean, you do have control on that, but I know you to be, you just do whatever the dice say. You like to have the dice drive the story.
Well, you know what it is there's nothing I dislike more as a player than when a DM is taking it easy on me. I don't like it.
Yeah.
When I see the guy roll and he's like, 13. I'm like, I know you hit me. You're just being soft. Kill me. Come at me.
Stop trying to hit me and
so
hit me.
So I try to give that same level of masochism back to my players.
Well, we got lucky. We
absolutely got lucky.
Got very, very lucky. And
help of Lorik.
It did seem like providence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was, Gel is, he can't go. He just can't go.
Desna's grace.
By Desna's grace. And also I think by Desna's grace, we just, as a party, we were able to survive the combat. Or, you know, was it Desna's grace or was it Della's grace? But I'm going to get to that in a second.
Baby,
Don't get ahead of me.
Too late.
First, I want to talk about Lorik being off the map. So we start out, you know, how often do you have this? One of your PCs is just not even on the map when the encounter starts because they're in a different location. I thought the fight with, I was about to call him Rumble Singskin. Wasn't that the name of the episode? The
Tark Singskin.
Tark Singskin on the boat. Lorik was below in steerage, you know, with the oarsmen.
That's right.
When that combat started. And I thought, oh my God, he's separated from this whole host of invading orcs and then this big dude with this huge falchion. And I was really concerned about, you know, getting up there in time. Now, that in that case, you were like, oh, no, well, you're right at the steps and the steps are just 20 feet up, so you can be there in one round. Oh, whoom, all those concerns wash away. This time, not so much. You're being, I think, really generous. And you're like, you can be on the map in three rounds. And that map was wide open. It was like there was nothing prohibiting us. So I was very far away on
right,
the map.
Even when you got on
even
the map.
Even to be on the map,
you
right?
were barely in bow range.
So you gave it three rounds. And, you know, as a player, that's a little bit frustrating because you're not in the combat, really. Every round, you're just running. I loved it from a story perspective. You know, like old man Lorik trying to sprint with his bear cub behind him. Yeah, exactly. And so during that time, actually, this is a behind-the-scenes show, so let me give you a little behind-the-scenes look. Being so not involved in moment-to-moment combat actually freed me up to do a little bit more Sirenscape. So you might notice in episode 56.
That's why it was so good.
Yeah, there's a lot of like sword swipes. There's a lot of arrow shots. There's a lot of doof and you know, all that stuff.
I love that
because
one.
I just had, yeah, I love the gory sounding one because I had more time to focus on it. So I was like, this is actually kind of fun. I get to actually just actually produce.
Yeah, and you can't fail at that like you do with rolling.
Actually,
nice.
I can fail at that.
Actually,
you remember Gormley's funeral? Too soon.
It was a one-gun salute.
Oh my God, phenomenal.
It was a cool element though. I just like the idea of trying something new. I think a lot of people would just wait for the party to be together, have them be ambushed, but no, you made that choice and I'm just going to have it come with a penalty, come with a price.
Yeah, and it wasn't too, I don't think you were too strict on that one. I think that one was pretty fair, and it made it for a fun combat because it was definitely, we always say harrowing for everything, but it was definitely complicated for the party to figure out what to do, and Lork was able to get there in enough time that he was able to fire off some arrows, which I really like because I want to explore that more, his background with the black arrows. He was trained as a bowman as opposed to just a melee fighter, and he and bows have such long range. It's awesome. So if you look at the map, I am so far away on the map, but I'm still attacking these guys as if I was within 30 feet because Lork doesn't have point blank shot, and it just doesn't make a difference for his attack rolls. If he's within like 90 or 120 feet or something, bows have a really long range. So that was just a fun part of the combat, I thought. Speaking of complicated, I want to get to a listener question that we had. Now, this is a little bit of a cheat because it is my cousin, but my cousin Steven is a big fan of the show and friend of the podcast.
Friend of the pod.
He has helped us many times with advice on how to do things, but he actually had a question this week that he asked me, and it just was really like a good question, and I thought that we should discuss it. And he was asking honestly for his game. So he started, because of the Glass Cannon podcast, like a lot of our listeners do, he started a Rise of the Rune Lords campaign. And I know a lot of you out there have started Rise of the Rune Lord campaigns because of the Glass Cannon podcast. And he's a few sessions in now, and things are starting to cook a little bit. He's making some progress, but he had a question. In a complicated combat where your characters are in a situation that is, you know, pretty deadly, and look at this one. Lork isn't even there, okay? So now you take Lork out of the equation. What is Baron thinking? What is Glabrous thinking? What's Della thinking? How are we going to handle this? We're outnumbered. 4 orcs to 1 giant. They're flanking us, you know. How much do you let your players talk about strategy and tactics like it is a game, which it is, in a situation where their characters absolutely do not have the time to talk about strategy and tactics? So I guess the root of the question is, as a GM, how much time do you allow characters to chat during turns about strategy?
Yeah, it's not like I have one of those
during combat rounds
Pictionary hourglasses that I turn over. Like, all right, when the sand.
But I think some GMs do.
Some GMs do, and it really depends on the group. We're not too bad at that. But what I hate is when it's a player's turn and they're like, well, what do you guys think? Should I do this? Should I do that? You know,
soliciting advice.
Make a decision. Yeah. You know, make a decision. And likewise, I don't like when people make a decision and then someone's like, you don't want to do that. You have a habit of doing that.
Yeah.
Well, you don't want to do that.
Guilty as
but
charged.
But sometimes it's because they don't understand like that.
You the can't, rules of
it
the
doesn't
game.
Work the way you think it works.
Right.
That I don't mind. But you know, it just wouldn't work like that. You have 6 seconds in real time. Make a decision. Even if it's the wrong one, well, then you know for the next round that you did the wrong thing. I have no
and
respect
a lot of time, sorry.
For cowardice.
And a lot of times when you make the wrong decision, you make the encounter way more interesting.
Yes.
You know, going into an encounter and just crushing it is partially it's fun. I can tell you it's way more fun when you've had 3 or 4 in a row that have been brutally difficult. Like that's when it's fun.
Yeah.
But if they're all easy because you have tactics them out to the point where you just can outsmart the DM, it doesn't have the same risk reward,
right?
You know, as making your character act fast. So what do you actually do? I mean, what you're saying is in this game that everybody listens to on the Glass Cannon, you believe that the players act quickly enough that it's not much of a concern for you?
You'll hear me sometimes when there's too much belaboring, like, I want to do this. Should I do this? All right. What's happening? What do you do? What do you do? All right. This guy's up in your face. What are you doing? Make a decision. You know?
Right. And that sort of aggressive, body language, like, you know, you guys can't see it, but Troy just, his body was shaking and he was pointing right at the character.
Stand up.
Yeah, you stand up, you get in their face. I mean, not, you know, within inches of their face, but you just say, what do you do, Lork?
Yeah.
Your friends are dying all around you. What do you do? You know, that sort of energy should spark the players into action. What I do is I like to give them an actual countdown timer.
You do.
Now, I wait for a little bit and I have no problem giving a player time to think about what they want to do when they don't know exactly how the spell works and they want to look it up, or they're deciding to use an ability that they're not that sure about and they're like, I want to look it up. I won't say, your character doesn't have time to look up his abilities. Like, that seems kind of silly.
Right.
I let them sort of do that stuff. But if they ever start talking about tactics to another player, like you said, should I cast this or should I give you a bit of luck this round? What do you want me to do? You know, that kind of stuff is like, I completely understand why players do it. I do not think that players are wrong in doing it, but because it is a game and you want to win. But as a GM, I think it's your responsibility to, as soon as they start that kind of stuff, I just cut them off and I go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you know, and that countdown, it creates a sense of tension.
Exactly.
Right. And sometimes I hold my action. Remember, that's another thing. You can always hold your action.
Yeah.
If you're paralyzed with indecision, if you're making the combat action slow down because you don't know what you want to do and you're so crippled by indecision that you can't like just move in one direction, that is completely fine. It happens to people all the time. It happens to our characters all the time. Just hold your action. You know what? I'm going to hold. And then you can jump in the order whenever you want, as long as it's between character turns. So, you know, I think that for the interest of the game as a GM, I think put a countdown timer on there. I'm not saying, but it is, like you said, it's all subject to the individual situations, yeah. The individual players.
And,
you know?
And as a player, you can help yourself out while other people are acting. Be thinking about your move. Don't wait till it's like your turn in the initiative order to be like, all right, now what do I want to do? Take that time to think about what your next action. Stay active, you know, aware of what's happening, but be thinking of your next move. Don't be texting on your phone or playing another game. You know, you're playing 4, 5, 6 hour sessions. Stay in the moment.
Yeah.
Commit to that 6 hours of role play.
But I think, you know, to counteract you there, I think a lot of times players are saying, okay, I am going to cast Summon Monster 3. Now, I'm the cleric. I'm going to cast Summon Monster 3, and then we're going to even the numbers, at least, on this fight. My creature will be able to flank there, and then I'll get the flanking bonus for the rogue. Perfect. When's it my turn? And then the guy before you goes below zero. Bang. He's down. And now your plan is gone. You have do you summon the monster, or do you heal your ally? Maybe you think that enemy is just going to ignore that ally because he's got a benevolent GM that won't do coup de grace. Or, you know, maybe you think that this guy has to come back up for whatever reason. And yes, I see you paralyzed with indecision. Don't turn to the player and say, do you want me to heal you? Don't turn to the other character and say, do you guys want to summon creature or do you want me to bring back up the fighter? Like, don't put it up for debate, because your character can't do that in the combat round. And it's more fun, I think, to feel like you're in that combat round. Yeah. Like you are making those decisions. I once had a player suggest to me, and this guy is hardcore, suggest to me that in each round, everyone just writes their action on a piece of paper and then turns it over. So you can have no strategy. So it's basically like someone goes left, someone goes right, and then all of a sudden the wizard's just standing alone with a huge giant swinging down at them, whatever the case may be.
I think that's in Pathfinder Unchained. They suggest doing away with initiative order and doing stuff like that.
Yeah, where everybody just says, well, what do you want to do? Everybody kind of spit it out, and then like the GM decides how actions resolve. And it helps to create the chaos of combat, which is something that I think is sorely lacking in the game a lot of times.
Yeah.
Because of all the nitty-gritty rules of the squares and the spaces and the whatever, sometimes we lose out on realizing how chaotic and awful combat is.
Right.
You know?
If it's neat and clean, you're either overpowered or you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, and that's on the GM. The GM has to force that feeling on players.
Yeah.
You know, but it is case to case. I wouldn't recommend saying you have a 10-second time limit at all times, no matter what. That's the house rule every time. Now, yeah, you can do it, but it's gonna frustrate players, and it might put you in a situation where they're always asking for exceptions. And some of them you might see, oh yeah, we'll make an exception here, make an exception there. Instead of doing that, just in general, leave it open. But as soon as they start with tactics, I say, give them a countdown, 5 seconds.
Keep it moving.
All right, I said I brought this up before that we were going to talk about it, and I want to talk about it right now, and it is...
Hit me.
Her name is Della Narn.
How and Della man, got her groove back.
Oh man, did she show up in episode 58. So... I guess my first question is, why did you decide to have Matthew make up a character that is a complete lie and just has such abilities that no one could ever match?
Well, you know,
why did you let him cheat? I guess that's the core of my question.
Yeah, it goes back to the creation of Della in the first place. And I told you guys probably right around before going into the Vault of Thorns, I'm like, things are about to get really hard. You guys need to prepare backup characters just in case someone dies.
Yeah, you told us
this. In the middle of an episode, we can't be like, oh, hold on while I create a new character. So I'm like, just create backup characters and we'll work out what those stories are. And if they ever come into use, they're ready. Well, Matthew.
And also, I just want to cut you off real quick. That is a great idea, even if you're not recording a podcast.
Totally
agree.
Because
when a character goes down, character creation can really grind everything to a halt. And this is pretty routine in games. You know, characters will die, and in a 6 or 8 hour session on a Sunday, you'll be spending 2 hours recreating one character while the other guys are all, you know, just hanging out, talking, doing whatever. To avoid that, to save time, when you're on your own time, you should be thinking of backup characters.
It's also going to make you play your characters less preciously. Do you know what I mean?
Which can make the story a little boring
right.
when you're overly precious.
Just got to self-preservation the whole time. You know,
it's not suicide
you've
mission.
You've got a backup guy.
Right.
You know, if worse comes to worse.
So what did Matthew say to you? I mean, did you talk about his backup character before Gormley passed?
We did. We had some light conversations. And then when Gormley passed, we had some time to be like, okay, let's figure out how we're going to introduce this character.
All right. So how did it get started?
He was like, I'm thinking about, a backup character of a Magus. I'm like, oh, interesting. Those are tough to play, but they are badasses. If you can.
So he started with the class.
Yes. And, then it came upon, oh, I want to do Fetchling. And I had never even played. I'd never come across a Fetchling in any of the adventures we've done. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I love stuff like that. I hate humans. I never play a human.
So he brought up the Fetchling to you.
And I was like, cool, all right. And so what's happening? Okay, now Gormley dies and we got to bring in Della. Now we got to get to how do we bring this character in? Because I couldn't figure out its backstory. What if Gormley had lived till book 5?
Right. You
know what I mean? Like, I can't worry about the backstory.
Would be in a completely different place.
Now we had a week. Let's talk about this backstory. Okay, so she's jumping around Shadow Plains. Well, maybe she ends up in the Vault of Thorns, but I can't have her just hanging out there, living, creating a little society with these horrible fey creatures. She's stuck. She like quantum leaped into a tree and she's been stuck there for an indeterminate amount of time.
And was that your idea?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good one.
Yeah. And I don't tell her either. And you guys didn't know until, you know, Matthew was obviously sitting here. You assumed he was going to be bringing a new character. But
I tell you, honest to God, I completely, like, I was so in the zone. I thought that it was a dead body. And it never occurred to me that you were introducing Matthew's character. It was really cool.
Yeah, and it's a good moment for you guys because it's so hard to bring in a new character. You got to do all that role playing, like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. Would you like to join our adventure for life?
Yeah.
You know? Exactly. It's so unrealistic.
Like, could you tell me all of your backstories? And then everybody has to reenact their entire backstory.
What are your powers? And what's interesting about Della is everything is new to her. So it makes it a little more organic of her for her to find out things about not only you guys, but about the world. But because you guys were in the middle of this huge, huge mission, you really never had a moment to get to know Della. And I think in 58, this is 58 we're talking about?
Yeah.
In 58, we'll get to know Della through her actions. In two rounds, she killed 3 orcs and a giant. Now, Baron will tell you that he did the dirty work of softening them up. Sure. But I mean, she was just magic missile, swipe, swipe, swipe. With
yeah,
the scimitar.
Flaming scimitar, shocking grasp.
Badass.
Really, really incredible. I think
and coming out episode.
Yeah, and I think Lork was very, very impressed with her skills, and as a fighter, he saw a 17-year-old girl, a slight, small, slightly translucent teenager, and was like, I'm gonna have to look out for her. You know, she's gonna be in a lot of danger. And now he's like, well, she might have to look out for him.
He might have to teach you how to use that sword.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, man. Well, I'm glad we once again had a little time to get together and talk about last week's episode. And I look forward to the next one. I will see you next week, buddy. Do you have any parting thoughts before we go?
No, I think that this was good.
You know what? We do want a parting thoughts, give you our email address. GlassCannonPodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is @GlassCannonPod. Please, go subscribe to our YouTube channel when you get a chance. It helps us to get those subscription numbers up, and then we can help to spread the word out to more people through the YouTube universe as opposed to the podcast universe. You know, it's a way to get the audience bigger and build the GCP community. You know, so if you can help us out, I would really, really appreciate it. And keep those questions coming. We are excited to answer them on the air.
Damn, Fetchling.
Let's roll.